I would define the Media Education Lab as a consortium of media literacy and media education professionals, which could include academics, researchers, writers, media producers, and media advocates that are all interested in promoting and building the media literacy education network.
Welcome to the Media Ed Podcast, celebrating the 20th anniversary of the Media Education Lab. I'm your host, Executive Director of the Lab, Yonti Friesen. In this podcast, I talk with lab members and colleagues about their experiences with the lab. Today, I'm thrilled to share my conversation with lab member Pam Steger, our Community Engagement Director. I asked Pam to reflect on her history of working with Renee Hobbs and the Media Education Lab. How did you start working with the Media Education Lab, in other words, Renee, and what were the circumstances?
My first acquaintance with Renee was in 1999, I believe. And it came about because I was doing prevention work in a high school in Attleboro, Massachusetts. The bell rang for the end of the day. And so the, you know, mass of students started heading towards the exit. I saw every single one of them take their hands and put them in their ears. And I realized they were putting earbuds in there so that they could plug into their world, which was the world of music. But it was the time of gangster rap, and women were hoes and bitches in every song. And there was just a lot of violence and substance abuse and stereotypes. And I had this aha moment, like, oh my God, they walk out of this school and they're getting exactly the opposite messages that I'm trying to give them in here. And so it was just a realization that that's where they were living when they weren't in the school. And so that's what I was really competing with. So I immediately went back into my office, to my ancient computer, and started putting in search words like music education, music literacy, and I started seeing media literacy come up. And the most legit website that seemed to come up in my search was the Center for Media Literacy in Los Angeles. And as I was looking at that, I was seeing that there was this scholars program and they just had a list of the topics. And I thought, oh my God, this is what I need. This is what I've been waiting for. And I called the Center for Media Literacy and Liz Toman picked up the phone. And I asked, do I have to come to LA to take this? Because it sounds exactly like what I need right now. And she said, where are you? And I said, well, I'm in a high school in Massachusetts right now, but I live across the border in Rhode Island. And she said, well, you are in luck, my friend, because my East Coast colleague, Renee Hobbs, is starting a scholars program at Babson College in another month. If you call her, I'll bet she might let you in. And she gave me Renee's number, and that's my first connection with Renee. And she, of course, she did let me in, and I took a 6-month every other Saturday, I think it was, all day course. That was the Felton Media Literacy Scholars Program. And it wasn't long after that that Renee started putting me to work because she thought she saw some potential as a presenter. And she was at that point in her career where she couldn't handle all of the requests she was getting. So she would send me out on the road on her behalf as another colleague of the Media Education Lab or whatever it was at the time. You know, I don't know that it had an official name. It was the Renee Hobbs Corporation.
That's awesome. So I never heard that story. So that's great. And it's interesting how everything comes around. Like in a way, so can you describe one or more significant relationship that you built at the Media Education Lab or the Renee Consortium, whatever you want to call it?
Yeah, well, I would say that probably until now, one of the most lucrative relationships I had was the very first job she passed off to me, which was with Holt Reinhart and Winston, the textbook publishing company, because that was the year that Texas had, strangely enough, put media literacy into their core curriculum. And it had to be introduced in this new generation of English language arts textbooks. So I was in Renee's stead to go down to Texas and introduce teachers to what the heck media literacy was, this thing that they were supposed to now be teaching. And it was an eye-opener because, you know, the textbook companies, being big, you know, publishing companies, really treat teachers well down there that they're trying to convince to buy their textbooks over all the others that are being made. And, you know, having worked in education for a long time, I'd never seen like somebody have a conference at a 4-star hotel and put you and your family up for, you know, the 3 days and then treat you to all these, you know, workshops. So it was a very interesting thing to see. Besides that, wow, I mean, relationships with lots of people, you know, in the lab, yourself included, you know, from all around the world, which has been really interesting, you know, at the various conferences that I've gone to over the years, the other media literacy advocates around the country and then around the world. So I went to Bangkok, Thailand, and I went to Sao Paulo, Brazil for a week. But yeah, I have wonderful relationships in that way, in that I've been able to form these international connections with colleagues. And I think those of us in media literacy are so passionate about the subject and know how valuable it could be if it was more widely adopted, that we automatically bond with the other people who feel the same way.
Yeah, commemorating our misery. Yes. How did all the work that you describe impact you personally and professionally?
Well, I think personally, I've just become not only a better consumer and critical, you know, analyst of the media messages that I consume myself, but, you know, I think the impact for others in my life has been the ripple effect of my own learning and practice of media literacy to share with everybody around me that I care about, because I don't want them, you know, to be duped or scammed or, you know, or just basically to have good media literacy skills. There's an example in the book that Renee and I and Liz wrote about my daughter calling me one day to say that in case I thought that my media literacy lessons with my 4-year-old grandson were going unnoticed. And then she told me a story about, you know, him yelling up to his father, "I'm not watching a poo movie, Daddy. I'm watching the little movie that's trying to sell me the next poo movie," which is kind of a perfect media literacy moment for a 4-year-old. So personally, my entire family, like I said, whether they like it or not, is pretty media literate, as well as myself and my friends and anyone else who would listen. And professionally, I probably could be a lot better off financially if it wasn't for media literacy. But I unfortunately or fortunately have always been someone for whom passion is more important than money. And so I, you know, followed my heart and mind both into this work. And I'm not sorry for the decisions I made. There are many, many, many rewards.
Yeah. And that's again, I mean, besides commemorating like our misery, it's also the passion that glue us together.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you kind of answer, but you can elaborate on another example, because I think your grandson example is amazing. It's kind of very similar to what's happening with Sky and Robin. So how has this impact transferred to others in your life?
the fact that I have been this sort of lone voice crying in the wilderness in parts of Rhode Island about media literacy has all of a sudden become a good thing because people know me and now we have some significant money and we have a program that just seems to be tailor-made for the scary times we live in right now when it comes to targeted violence and extremism. The project that the Media Ed Lab has is a federally funded project from the Department for Homeland Security, from their Office of Targeted Violence and Terrorism Prevention. And it is a three-pronged project that will first have a series of one-hour Zoom, what we're calling community conversations, that will be part informationals. And then we will break into breakout groups so that people can just talk to each other about a topic that was just introduced and maybe break down some of those silos that we have now in echo chambers. And the second phase is all of that kind of similar training, but specifically for educators, librarians. And we now have just recently added a law enforcement component. And then the third piece is a youth media contest and campaign where we are going to be asking youth to create their own messages in their own media to do some of these preventive medicine messages about these issues. And so those relationships that I have spread this word in whatever way I can, you know, summer services at churches and in groups that I'm in and wherever. It's all coming around now so that those relationships are really key in getting buy-in for this project.
That's it for today's episode. I want to give thanks to my guest, Pam Steger, for sharing her thoughts and for her valuable contribution to media literacy education. Please join us for the next episode of the Media Ed Podcast as we continue to celebrate the work of the Media Education Lab and envision its future. Our soundtrack is Vera Song, composed and produced by Victor Lundberg. I'm your host, Yonti Friesen. Until next time, use your media literacy power thoughtfully, kindly, and wisely.